Avengers.
So hard to stay silent during that.
I was doing a little dance number. Welcome to me not finding the Google Doc for this episode, so I don't know what I have to read, but I'm pretty sure this is Podigis. Welcome to Podigis, episode 404.5. Welcome to the Dark Feedback.
Rose Morningstar Feedback. Recorded whatever today is, May 19th, 2017.
Podigis is your critically nostalgic analytical tour of the Digimon anime. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and today it's just me and fellow Trailmon, Ashley McDonald.
Can Trailmon get headaches? Because I have one.
I can't remember specifically, but I would not be surprised if one of the jokes that we just rolled our eyes at, Trailmon make, was about them having a headache. You know, like, one of the kids sitting on the Trailmon head, and they're like, I have a headache, because there's a kid on my... Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
So before we dive into the episode, we have a couple of life updates. But also, this is the first live episode that we are doing on YouTube instead of Mixer, which means there is video, which really doesn't mean we don't have webcams. We're basically on YouTube that's the best place and the easiest place to stream. And we figure the easiest place for people to watch if they follow us anywhere else.
Mixler wanted us to pay them. We were like, no.
Yeah. The reason we moved off Mixler was they had a free tier, which we used to use, was I think an hour per week we could stream for free. And we had a hard limit of, we had to cut off after an hour because of that limit. And they were like, never mind. We're getting rid of that free tier. So you have to pay to do anything. And I'm like, oh, we don't really want to pay. And people, I think, are more comfortable streaming or watching streams on video platforms anyway. And for this episode, this is our first attempt with, you know, live streaming video. I mean, we've done gaming streams, but for those, we've basically just done PS4 built-in streaming because trying to actually do an OBS setup with my laptop for streaming was really difficult. And it was basically like 2 frames per second, maybe less than that, like one frame for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It was really bad.
We work at tech companies, but we don't have any high tech things.
We don't have like a gaming PC or really high end PC. So like, that's kind of what you need to stream well. So I did that the first day that Cyber Sleuth came out, and it was a total train wreck. So anyway, it's all to say we're doing this through video. It's basically just a live made video of a normal Podigis YouTube episode, which is just, you know, the title, the chapter title will change when we go to a different second section of the podcast. It's not going to be
fancy.
It's not going to be webcams of us or anything, because we don't really feel comfortable with that.
I would just put it on the cap.
Yeah, I mean, if there was tons of demand, we would consider it, but we don't really have like good webcams for that, or even a setup that would work well for that. We're basically sitting at a table looking at each other.
Yeah, we're just staring at each other, and we look at the cat sometimes.
Mostly look at the cat. Anyway, we had an hour of setup headaches, which thanks to listeners who hung on the chat with us and helped debug problems, but... we should have that all smoothed out, and hopefully we can add some stuff to the video. It's not going to be a webcam of us, but I'm thinking I can put in basically like screen capture of what we're talking about, which could be cool to look at, especially when we're talking about feedback. We can show people's comments and stuff like that. But we don't have that for this episode, but maybe in the future. It already took me way too long to set up this episode with the basic, just reconstructing what a normal YouTube Podigis episode looks like. So extra stuff in the future. And other live updates. We released 404 last week, and we're releasing 405 next week. And then the goal is to have episodes come out much faster after that. My goal for that is weekly. So 405 next week, and then 406, and then 407, and 408, all 1 week after another. Because
even though we're going away?
Right. Yes. So Ashley and I are also going on a trip to the East Coast next Thursday for most of a week, not a full week, and we're going to be pretty busy then, but I'm hoping to bank up the editing of those. The main reason for that is the next episode of 405 is about the Royal Knights arc, which was, I think, a whole 10 episodes, maybe 9 episodes, whatever. But then after that, the next couple episodes are all pretty short, except for the retrospective episode, which we haven't recorded yet. But anyway, so after that, there's 405, which is just about the last 4 episodes, about the Lucimon battle, basically. And then there's 406, which is about the movie, which we're going to record tomorrow.
No.
Sunday.
The movie is 405. You haven't released 405, which is 9 episodes. 406 is the last 4. 407 is the movie.
Yeah, that sounds right. And then 408 might not be able to come out a week after, because that's going to be a big, that's going to be like a long recording and take a long time to edit. But the 405 and 406 are both fairly short, which is why they're only going to be a week to come out. And stay tuned on social media for updates about when we do feedback episodes for those, because that's going to be like a much tighter schedule. It'll probably be something like releasing the main episode on Thursday and recording the feedback episode on Wednesday, and then releasing it Wednesday night, and then main episode comes out Thursday, something like that. Just so you have like almost a full week to submit feedback before we do that. But it probably means feedback episodes are shorter, because we don't want to clog your feed with, like, you know, basically Thursday morning, wake up and there are 4 hours of podcasts to listen to. So anyway, that's kind of what's coming up, and hopefully we can, the main thing, I'm like, okay, be a little bit skeptical of what I just said, because we are going on a trip and my goal is to get a lot of that work done before we leave, but it's possible that might not work out. And I recently found out that the audio issue that was in 404 that made it take a long time to edit is also in 405. So it's not 406.
But you could have avoided it in 404.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that.
I don't want to.
Apparently there was, basically the Audacity export was corrupted, but I had the original Audacity file, project file, so I could have exported again in a non-corrupted way. But the Audacity project, when it was in Dropbox, it just looked like a folder of gibberish, and I didn't realize it was an Audacity project. Anyway, so that kind of sucks, and it sucks that I couldn't do that 405. Anyway, should we mention that recruiting email I got today?
Yes.
I only want to mention it because it's relevant to the last episode.
Yesterday? I don't know. Whatever.
Time is relative. I assume the person didn't actually listen, but the experience for... it sounds kind of like I'm bragging, but I'm really not. If you're a tech worker in the San Francisco Bay Area, get a lot of random recruiter emails. It sounds like, to people who are used to having to like beg and find jobs, getting emails of people trying to recruit you seems like, oh my God, that's like a
story. Okay, wait, now I had the best recruiting email.
I just want to finish explaining. Like, yeah. Just getting recruiter emails does not mean anything. Like, you can, they'd be like, oh, we're so interested in talking to you. You can talk to them and then be like, okay, we're not, like, it doesn't necessarily mean you're like guaranteed anything. They basically send out these blanket emails to lots of people. It gives you a lot more opportunities. So it's like a great, a great privilege. I'm not saying I'm like not privileged in getting this, but it's not like, oh my God, this person sent an email to you that like gives you like, you're guaranteed a position there or whatever. They basically just send out blanket emails to whoever they can find who is listed as an engineer.
I can give you a perfect example in my silly one though.
Okay.
So I also work in tech, but I'm not a tech role, but I think I have somehow gotten on lists for recruiting emails as well. But mine was for the title of Express Lube Writer at Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram. And I was like, that's the best title ever. Also, I have none of these qualifications. I don't know why you've sent me this.
So strange. But a lot of recruiters try different approaches. Some of them, you know, like send an email asking to get in touch, and then like if you don't, and I just don't reply to anyone because I'm like, I'm not interested in these jobs. And I initially, when I started working here, like would reply to them and be like, oh, sorry, I'm not interested, but I'd like to stay in touch. And then I realized I didn't really want to do that.
Jeff just didn't care about that Google
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, but anyway, so some of them will just send you an email like every week being like, sorry, I'm being such a pain. But like, but anyway, recently I've gotten a couple that are trying, like they found my presence in other places on the internet and are trying to connect that way. And I don't think they actually listened to the podcast, but they started off the email being like, I couldn't help but like fall down a rabbit hole of listening to your podcast episodes. I too think that the dark nothingness is an interesting place to explore. I'm like, what? And then actually reminded me of the last episode, the 404 was titled Welcome to the Dark Nothingness. And it's very
and I'm
possible.
Like, I think they just read that title. And
well, it is very possible to actually listen to the episode. And
I
we're like,
I don't think so.
I mean, it's possible the recruiter's about our age. And it's like, oh, I'm interested in Digimon. But yeah, it's also, they probably just saw the episode title and were like, yeah, dark nothingness. That sounds like a place. Let me like, yeah. If they actually listen, then it's not that funny. But if they try to plug it into their template, that is pretty funny. Yeah. Let's transition. So hopefully that actually transitioned us.
We don't even know if you can hear us at all. Who knows?
I hope so. I really was hoping that it would be possible with OBS and with streaming that I would be able to like put in the transition music into just switching scenes, but apparently I have to do two different apps at once, so that's confusing. I just tried to say two words at once, so
Jeff, your brain's broken, so whatever.
I haven't seen a transition in the live stream, and I'd be behind I am behind somehow. We did transition. Okay, fortnightly question. What was our fortnightly question? This is the part where you started filling the doc and didn't think to add this. Oh, no, you did. You did.
What?
What's the question, Ashley?
What's the most romantic Digimon ship and why? I did add it, you fool.
And why did we brought this up? Just because in 404 there was a lot of shipping conversation. Wait, before?
What
before,
was in 404? Oh, all just like silly ships like Koichi and Koji.
Yeah, there were a lot of silly ships. No. The Koichi and Koji stuff I don't think really comes up. I think I made a joke about it, but I don't think it really comes on strong until 405 with the Royal Knights and Lord Nightmon shipping them, basically. there was like Koichi and Cherubimon. I had a shipping corner and we filled in stuff to talk about in there. But I want to mention something that I found. It's actually from the next couple episodes, but I posted it on Twitter, and it is relevant to romantic shipping. Where did I put it in the doc? I didn't put it in the doc.
Yeah.
I totally messed up that one. But basically, the first episode of the next chunk is they get another backstory dump about how, and the new details they introduce is they elaborate on how the 10 legendary warrior spirits were split up among the 3 celestial Digimon. And so I made a joke on social media about how, like, Shurimon got 5, and then Strafimon got 2, and Afanimon got 3. And how it's, like, for all of Shurimon's talk about, like, oh, it's unfair that there's one beast Digimon and 2 human Digimon in the celestial loom, so unfair. But, like, he had 5, and they had 2 and 3. Like, he had so much more. But people point out that it's, like, yeah, the beasts have 5, and the humans have 5, too.
Yes.
But still, it does not seem fair to give one person 5 and then 2 and 3. That's not fair. But
that's not the point of the story.
But the two that are isolated, so there's 5, 3, and 2. The ones that are two, the ones that Seraphimon had, which are the only one that are isolated as a pair, are, and you can see the kanji, basically. They're like malformed kanji. They're not exactly Japanese kanji. They're like a little bit different. It's light and wind, which I think is canonical evidence of Zoe and Koji being canonical ship, so, you know.
Totally.
Ashley's eyes was, like, darting around, like, you were basically doing that meme with the eyes and the, you know?
Yes, I know the meme.
What's it called? I don't know how to describe it.
I just remember the one recently with Mikasa, like, can't overhear, too far away to overhear Eren and whatever.
It's the one with the, like, I think it has, like, 4 panels, and there's, like, a woman, usually a woman, they can add other characters, but, and there's, like, charts over her face while she's, like, calculating something. But that's what your eyes were doing, and I was like, whoa, I'd never seen this in real life.
It's a real thing. It's basically real life.
Anyway, to actual answers to the question, can you start reading some from Twitter?
Me read some from Twitter. From Luna Powers, canonically, Takato and Jerry, they grow so much together through the series as characters and chemistry wise. I'm okay with that ship.
Yeah, I do. It's weird because, like,
I do think that they.
The chemistry, I feel like, doesn't really develop though, because it's like Jerry's basically, you know, non corrupted Jerry is not really present for the whole, like, last third of the series.
Yes, but okay, if we're asking what's the most romantic ship in actual Digimon, like, I do agree that they are given scenes that it's like, okay, yes, you are actually given scenes where you are, like, supposed to be cute and stuff.
It's totally true. I do feel a little bit conflicted when I think about it, though, because I'm like, this, like, ship that we think of as being so cute, it's basically, like, I don't, like, if you think about the time before she gets corrupted, before the I was going to say Dark Spore, the D-Reaper Spore, finds her. I don't feel like if you ended the series there, I don't think you would conclude they've developed so much. They are so cute together now. They, like, are basically are a couple. So then it's weird to think of those scenes that we think of as, like, solidifying the chemistry and making them, like, canonically the most romantic couple, that those scenes happen when she's not actually present. And it's basically just Takato's affection for her that makes us think that they're such a good couple. That weirds me out when I think about it too much. Do you agree?
Well, I'm trying to, because there is a point where then corrupted Jerry and regular Jerry, like, regular Jerry has a presence within corrupted Jerry, and clearly she, like, starts having her own thoughts, and,
but,
like,
she doesn't, like, talk about Takato at all, right?
Isn't she
just concerned with getting out and, like, her own. I don't feel like there's anything about, like, wanting Takato at all.
Wants Takato to save her, doesn't she?
I don't remember it being about, like, her calling out to Kata or anything, that it was just like, I think it was more about like, does she want to be saved or not? And there are points where she doesn't really want to be saved.
All.
Yeah. So I don't know. Not to like counter, like I do think that like, this is a very common opinion. And it's like, I think it's totally valid opinion to have. I think it's more just the, like, it has, it's a weird structuring when you think about it, but
I think it works.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know,
that's the thing.
Intellectually is good.
It works when you like consume the series in the way that most people consume the series. When you analyze it and overthink it, quote unquote, overthink it, I think it starts to break down. But if you're like, if you're not overthinking it, I don't think most people watch the series and come away from it thinking, oh, they developed a lot, but that development was weird because Jerry wasn't actually there for most of it. I think, I don't know, whatever. Homoerotic on Twitter said, Ty and Matt, they thought they were jealous about Sora, but slowly realized they were both jealous of Sora.
Facts.
Yeah, it's true. No more commentary on that. It's true.
It's just, did you watch the latest Try movie? It's just true.
Alex Lawrence on Facebook said, Haru and Yujin. So for people who aren't, don't know much about Atmon, I assume you know these names, actually, but...
Is Haru the main guy?
Yes, Haru's the main...
Is Yujin the cool one?
If you want to call him that. Okay, so...
Is he the one who looks cool?
So people who maybe aren't following Atmon or don't even know like the character details, Haru is the main character. He's very Takato-like. He's not completely Takato, but he is pretty similar to Takato. And Yujin is his best friend, who is very similar to like the Tai or Davis character. He's literally like an homage. His last name is Ozora, which is the two kanji for, it's not exactly the kanji that's in Taichi, but it's the same kanji that's in Daisuke. For big, the O is big, and Zora is Sora. So it's like, and he plays soccer, and the two soccer players in Adventure are Tai and Sora, Taichi and Sora. So it's like, the two kanji in his last name are basically Tai and Sora, or Daisuke and Zora. So it's like, that's an interesting homage. Anyway, he's definitely modeled after like old Digimon protagonists. He plays soccer. If you've seen him in artwork, he has very thick eyebrows, which is a weird characteristic. He doesn't have red hair though. He has reddish hair.
I don't know him well enough for that.
Haru has green hair, apparently, right?
Yes, Haru has green hair.
Anyway,
Jeff can't see colors.
They are basically, Haru is very timid and shy like Takato, and Yujin is basically like Taichi.
Oh,
Taichi,
I think his hair is reddish. It's like Izzy color.
Right. But whenever they go into their backstory, they always... It's very close to being romantic, like, canonically. Like, it's... So, like, in Atmon, everyone gets... like, when they get a Digivice, when they get an Appy Drive, they get a little prompt that shows up on the thing. So the first episode, Haru finds a vending machine. The vending machine says, are you a protagonist? Mm-hmm. And when he selects yes, then the Appy Drive comes out. And every character, basically, when they got their Appy Drive, had some similar situation to that. And Yujin, like, everything we learn about Yujin's backstory is that he, like, friendly loves Haru so much that he'd be, like, willing to sacrifice his life for him. So Yujin's question when he gets an Appy Drive is, like, would you sacrifice yourself for someone else? For someone else's life. So it's, like, he's all about, basically, like, helping Haru in like a way that's like, that's... Anyway, I'm just going to finish the comment now. Now I've explained who Haru and Yujin are and why.
Oh yeah, we've only just said Haru and Yujin.
But this is the comment that like most people watching Atmon are like all in the Haru Yujin train, and it is very like, I mean, literally in the context of the story, I think they're just going for they're really, really close friends. I'm also watching in raw Japanese without subtitles, and my understanding of Japanese is very not 100%, so I'm not catching everything. But anyway, Haru and Yujin, the two of them are so close to each other that at one point, Gatchaman thought the two of them were hanging out as a date. Also, the scene between them at the end of episode 28 could easily be seen as Yujin confessing to Haru. Oh, I can't remember which scene that was exactly. 28? That was a couple episodes ago? Anyway, not to mention that they're always blushing each other. Hello. And Jin Teutonic on Tumblr also said Haru x Yujin is the most overtly romantic, amusingly.
Well,
there's something to be said that, like, even if the show is not saying that, like, literally they are gay for each other and they are dating, that, like, the way that they are, you know, expressing affection for each other is much more overt than even the romantic relationships in Digimon. That, like, usually the way that romantic ships or the romance is played out in Digimon is a very like over the top, non-realistic. It's like JP having hearts in his eyes, like pushing Zoe cause he loves her so much. And then she's being like, no, or it's like in, I mean, we haven't covered in the podcast yet, but the, at the end of the Royal Knights arc, when there's like a, definitely some Zoe and Takuya fodder, and it's like Zoe, like kind of like contemplating about Takuya, right? And
yeah,
but it's not them like actually interacting in a way that is like showing their affection for each other. It's basically just like kind of having a crush from afar. And I mean, that's like similar to the Tai and Sora stuff in season 2. And even when like Tai, when Sora and Matt are supposedly dating in 02, we don't really see much affection between them. So I think there's something to be said that like Haru and Eugene show more affection for each other in the context of the show than most actual ships in Digimon. And like even some of the stronger ships in Tri, it's like Mimi and Izzy, or Mimi and Koshiro, like, what was that? What's that face?
That's like a, they don't show affection for each other at all. Right, and any affection that you're supposed to imply of like, Mimi came and gave him oolong tea or something when he stayed up for days is like, all just subtly implied.
Right, it's not like, and it's like the stuff we read as affection is like Kushra blushing when he sees Mimi or when she gives him a food item or something.
That's, you know? No, but that's why, I haven't seen Atmon, but that's why I think Takato and Jerry is still like, they actually show affection.
Hmm.
Even if they're perhaps not all mentally present in the showing of the affection.
So now moving on to some voicemail answers we got. First one comes in from May, who is also the host of Lost in Translationmon. Here is their answer.
My favorite ship in all of Digimon would have to be from Cross Wars. And I won't go into it too much because of spoilers and I don't remember too much of this ship, but it's Mirthamon and Beelzemon. Mm. I just found their story quite compelling and it was kind of unexpected because it was a more sort of adult ship rather than, you know, little kids having crushes on each other. This was an actual, like, a love, and it seemed like quite a great love, and it's what I'm really looking forward to seeing again on rewatching Cross Wars, because I just found it to be quite a sweet and lovely ship, and it just makes me happy. So, yeah, that's probably my favorite ship in all of Digimon across all the seasons.
So there's some backstory. May, I either on Twitter or in a Patreon Slack at some point before they submitted their answer or right after they submitted their answer, they were like, oh, this is the most obvious answer. Like, this is like, it's for Cross Wars. And like, it's like, I forget exactly how they worded it, but it was like, this is like, definitely like, you should see us coming, or it's like super obvious. And I was like, which one is it? Like, it's been a while since I've seen Cross Wars, so I'd kind of forgotten about this ship. And Ashley, you haven't seen it, so you don't even know.
I don't even know. I look forward to Digimon ships.
It's
totally made up in your mind.
Because like I went into this Beelzemon appearing basically in Cross Wars, and was like, "Oh, Beelzemon's Beel! Oh my god, Beelzemon! Oh my god!" Because I was like, you know, remembering I was remembering season 3 Beelzemon, and so I like, kept wanting there to be that much development for this Beelzemon. And like, we looking back, I'm like, we do get a lot of development. It's like, it's that he has like a romantic partner, and it's like, that's so weird. Have you seen Mervamon in Cyber Sleuth?
Yes.
She's like a snake lady. I forget exactly how that manifests. She has like a snake arm, barely wears any clothes. She's part of the like most frustrating fan service in Cross Wars. Her boobs bounce around a ton. And
wow.
Yeah.
It's an adult relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Anyway, I mean, I'm excited for that. I definitely remember, like, while watching, being kind of disappointed by it because I wanted basically a similar
more cathartic boob jiggles.
I wanted Beelzemon to get boob jiggle.
Yeah, boob jiggle.
No. What I wanted was a really big cathartic moment like Beelzemon got in Tamers. And looking back, there were a couple moments. There's a song in particular that plays during an evolution with Beelzemon that I like, one of my favorite songs in Cross Wars, and probably all of Digimon too. Called like Cross 4 Be the Guardian. Anyway, it's a really good song, and so it is like a good emotional moment when he kind of joins and stuff, but there was never anything that reached the height of Beelzemon in Tamers, so I remember being disappointed. Now going into it, I think it's a totally different experience you get when you watch something the first time and you expect it to be something that it's different than it is, And then when you go back and reread or rewatch and you know what it's going to be, so you have your expectations aren't as high, or you know what your expectations are much more matched to what the thing actually is, you can appreciate it much more. That's how I recently felt with My Hero Academia. When I read it the first time, I was like, oh, it's going to be so, and I was like, oh, this is kind of disappointing. Knowing what it was and going back and rereading and rewatching it, I was like, oh, it's so much better. Do you feel like you have that experience?
I guess I'm trying to think of what happens when you don't really remember exactly what happens, but you remember the feeling that you had from it. Like, but you didn't remember. Hello, cat.
Our cat is whining. Yeah, that seems like it has potential to be bad, because if you remember having a huge emotional reaction and you don't have it because of whatever restriction there is in life being different, knowing that it's coming, whatever, that could be more disappointing.
Maybe. I don't know. Because I feel like, you know, the thing is, I went into Frontier being like, I have this vague notion that, like, I didn't like it because of X reason, that they get lost somewhere and I just didn't care anymore. But I couldn't remember all the things that, like, led up to that. But in the end, that notion was correct still. So, like, I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I guess there's a difference between, like, the time frame when we're talking about rewatching Digimon is so, for you at least, like, Cross Wars is not that long enough for me. I watched it at the end of college. It was, I guess at this point, been like 7 years, but I think I remember enough. You were watching Frontier, it's like, it's been 10 plus years.
Yes.
I think you forget enough that it's like, you kind of start to lose that effect that we were talking about. And just because a couple of people mentioned it in the chat, just want to point out how Mervamon is the, right now I'm confused. There's a confusion between Minervamon and Mervamon, but they're different entries. I'm so confused now.
Uh-oh.
Spaghetti. But they, aren't they the same? I'm so confused now.
Uh-oh. Just remind me.
I am so... I think they are the same. Let us know in the comments stuff. Sorry if we look this up beforehand.
Jeff. But
we don't have time while recording the episode to look up things like this that are not that simple. Because I'm like, oh, there's a lot to read to figure out what's going on here. Yeah, and so that was the first voicemail. Second voicemail came in from AR Pulver, who runs System Restore, Digimon blog.
Okay, most romantic ship. I have to go with Haru and Eugene from Atmon. They care very deeply for each other. They go out of their way to support the other. They're constantly picking each other up. Now that they're fighting together, they're risking their lives for each other. So it's a great ship right there. And so many other scenes are even framed in a romantic context. Haru treats their get-togethers like dates. He wishes he could open up to Eugene, spend more time with them. All with the cherry blossoms flying around. There's a couple good scenes here and there in other seasons. Honestly, though, this feels like the most romantic Digimon has ever gotten.
As you mentioned, I think it's the first time Air Pulver, he's commented a lot. I think he's in the live stream now, in the chat room.
Yes.
I think that's the first voicemail he sent in. So,
woo!
Thank you.
Round of applause, first voicemail.
Yeah.
Get some sort of achievement badge.
Okay. That's just weird.
I've been corrupted by tech.
We don't need to gamify the podcast. I mean,
we have to gamify everything.
I guess we already did a game. I guess that's what the fantasy draft is, gamifying the podcast. Yeah, no, I mean, those are...
He's also winning, so there you go.
Oh, yeah. I think he's number one in the fantasy draft right now. Through just, like... I forget. We should actually do an analysis of, like, which kind of points he's won.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's mostly been the ridiculous points, or if it's been the accurately predicting favorites points. Yeah, I mean, mostly... Some of the points of what I pointed out before, I think even if they're not going for they are actually, you know, gay or bi and are dating each other, which would be a huge deal in Japan to have main characters. This is a side note, but I've heard people praise Atmon for having gay characters in it.
Uh-huh.
This is kind of, it's hard to talk about this without referring to the specific scene, because it's a... It's basically I think it's the episode where there's a Twitter-like app. Stop smiling while you pet the cat. It's creepy, Ashley.
You're biting me.
The cat is attacking Ashley, and Ashley's just smiling at me while it happens. Yeah, there's an episode where there's like a Twitter-like Digimon that goes rogue, and doing stuff, and I guess it's showing people's profiles as it's doing that, and it's doing some kind of funny things, like there are people upset because their friends have blocked them on Twitter, and it's like that's what the chaos is that's going on. It's just this like man who's upset about his feelings because his friend blocked him. But anyway, but there's a
that's the world today.
I think this is the right episode, but there's like one shot they show is of a basically two girls who look like they're on like a camping trip, and they're like have like their arm around each other, and it says like I'm with my partner.
Oh.
But it's hopefully the mic isn't picking up the cat going to town on his cardboard sofa.
We have a little, he's having a lot of fun with that right now.
We have a cardboard sofa that he likes to tear apart. Anyway, yeah. So I think partner is the word they use. But anyway, the word they use in that tweet on the show is not an explicit romantic thing. It is a thing that can be romantic, but is not always romantic.
Like in the way that when people use partner here,
right? It's, business yes, partner. Similar. Right. It's a little bit different because I think if you are saying partner in English, you do mean business partner or romantic partner. I don't think there's a, like, my friend partner, and, like, you're talking like an assignment or something maybe, but, like, you wouldn't just, like, refer to your friend as a partner. I think that is possible in Japanese. And even if it were an explicit acknowledgement of this couple, it's just a random shot. Like, it's something, but it's really not much. And anyway, so I think some people look at that and like, oh, well, that's only like the next step is that Haru and Eugene are gay or bi for each other. And it's
how
like,
old
oh,
are they?
It's a huge leap. They are in second year of middle school is what the opening of the show says every time. So I'm guessing that translates
it's like 12,
13. That's eighth grade in the US. So 12, okay, 13.
So
are you going to say it's not old enough to know if they're their sexuality? Cause
no, that's not what I was going to say, because you are allowed to know your sexuality that young. But I still think it has the troubling thing of, like, oh, pairing young children together.
Oh, that, yeah. But all of Digimon has that. I mean,
yeah.
basically the only... If only characters are immune to that, or quote-unquote immune to that, are the tri-characters when they're at their tri-age, which is still... High school, like, is still creepy for, like, adults to be talking about shipping high school age students. And because so much of anime takes place in high schools, it's always, this whole aspect of fandom is always a little bit creepy and sketchy. And
I felt better about it when I was in high school and I was doing it.
That's the weird thing about Digimon is that I still put myself on the playing field of that. Like, I still think of myself as being the same age as these characters because I grew up with them. Mm. And I guess Atmon not so much.
You did not like, grow up with Atmon.
No. It makes me feel like a child at heart.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually. Yeah. It makes me feel like I wish the show dealt with plot more.
A.R. Pulver also confirms that they are 13.
Oh, 13. Yeah. That was old enough for me to think that Digimon was too cool. No, that I was too cool for Digimon.
You were super too cool for Digimon.
In truth, Digimon was too cool for me.
Digimon was way too cool for you. It's facts.
So the third voicemail comes in from Allie.
I will say Kari and Davis because Davis puts a lot of time and energy into it and cares a lot, never stopping for anything. Also, I love how in the Japanese version, whenever Davis is shot down, Bimon always says, never give up. His effort was much better than I ever had with the boys I liked in fourth grade.
Oh man, were they just in fourth grade, I guess?
I guess so.
Oh, God. Huh. That's weird to think about him being so pursuant of a romantic relationship. I think we talked about before, like a long time ago, about how the models for the 02 kids look more grown up than the adventure.
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like it would have been weird for a character like Davis to, with a adventure style model, to be that pursuant of a romantic relationship. But it feels less weird in 02, but that's still weird. I think about it,
still
huh?
Still really young.
Yeah.
I can't agree with this ship.
I think it's a pretty controversial choice.
That's controversial. Although, I'll accept your reasoning. But
I'm trying to remember who. There's someone involved with the production. I think it's Jeff Nimoy, the dub director of Adventure in 02, said that was like what he thought was most.
I don't.
What he liked best.
Jeff Nimoy, come on.
I guess. I think it's Jeff Nimoy. I'm thinking.
You're all ignoring Takeru. Takeru's the best. Just like no comment.
No, I am trying. I feel like it wasn't just Jeff Nimoy, because I think Jeff Nimoy has said that, but I think there's also like someone like the one of the Japanese staff, like the director or someone, or the one of the original writers or something, said something that like they, the way they read it was that, oh no, I think it wasn't about Davis. It was just about like, it was saying that Takeru has feelings for Hikari and Hikari does not reciprocate those feelings.
Wow.
So it wasn't like explicitly, and she likes Davis or Daisuke.
I think Try contradicts this.
Try, everyone in Try is just a quantum state of both liking and not liking with everyone else. Like,
you know what? The Zero Two kids don't exist in Try, so.
It's true. And I think
if Kari really liked Davis, wouldn't she be like, hey, where is Davis?
Looking back now, I appreciate Kari and Davis as a ship much more now that I've seen JP and Zoe. Just because, like,
no, you can't.
Just because, like, yes, it lowers the bar. Like, because Zoe, JP and Zoe, like, JP is harassing of Zoe in the same way that Davis is harassing of Kari. But in a way that's much more offensive and frustrating and sexist and objectifying. Maybe I go back and find Zero Two just as objectifying, but like, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't condone this. It's not got the Ashley Seal.
Can't do it. Does Davis ship himself with Hikari? Are we going to find out?
Let's ask Davis.
Yeah, let's ask Davis.
So our fourth voicemail is from awesome listener / Digimon actual character Davis.
Yeah.
Whoa, Davis, Podigious, you know what it is. What's the most romantic ship of all of Digimon? Well, it's obvious. It's the SS Love Boat 3000. That's what you meant by ship, right? Nah, I'm just kidding. The most romantic ship is Skull Greymon and Megidramon. Those two are meant for each other. Here, I can prove it. I secretly recorded one of their conversations via cell phone when they weren't looking.
Oh, hey, Megidramon.
What's going on, Skull Greymon?
Not much. I just wanted to return this novel to you.
Oh, my Harlequin novel.
Yeah, it was really good. It was, very romantic.
Yeah, I thought you might enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, so, look at you. Look at those muscles on you. Man, you must noticed. Really work out.
Actually, no, I just digivolved into this.
Well, I'm just jealous because I'm just bones.
Oh, no, you're very handsome.
No, I'm disgusting. You can't even see my heart.
But that's the best part about you.
Oh, Megidramon, I...
Listen, Skull Greymon, there's something I want to tell
you. Hey, is there someone recording our conversations?
What? Uh-oh. Gotta get out of here.
Dark shot!
No, Davis, don't be dead!
What do you think, guys? Pretty romantic, right? Well, I better go to the hospital now because they hit the bullseye, baby. Catch you later, Podigious.
Oh, boy.
This boy didn't ship himself with Kari. I'm shocked, to be honest. But
no, that was great. I think we have to enter... Megidramon and Skull Greymon into the canon. I think it's canonical now.
Do they even, like, meet?
No.
No.
They're in different seasons. But if they did, the sparks would fly.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Duh. I agree.
That was amazing, Davis.
Okay, in the chat, Dizzy Wolf says the most romantic ship is Gatsumon and Punkimon. I can do it. Yeah. I can do
it. They have lots of time in the dungeon together. In the quote-unquote dungeon.
They should love each other in the dungeon.
So I think that is it for our ship heavy fortnightly question.
I think everybody was excited to talk about their favorite ship in Digimon.
Okay, so now on to basically a bunch of comments and general feedback about Frontier, about the episodes we covered, mostly about episode 404, but some general Frontier stuff too. There, I found in the doc.
Yeah, I was like, wait, you found it.
This is where I put the Light Spirit and Wind Spirit being isolated, because that confirms Kozumi, that's Zoe and Koji. Other thing that I found on Twitter, how did I find this on Twitter? I basically retweeted
it wasn't
this.
A tweet at us?
No, I retweeted it. I found it somehow and then retweeted it.
Wow.
Basically, yeah, what was... Because it's not mentioning Digimon at all. Like, I have a bunch of searches. I think it just showed up in my timeline as being generally interesting. So this is in regards to Sakakuman and Sephirotmon, which, you know, like we talked in that episode, at least a brief bit about how Sephirotmon and Sakakuman are based on the concept of, I guess, Jewish mythology of Sephirot, and the how, like, in Sakakuman's base form of being, like, all those different orbs lined up, standing up, I guess, looks a lot like the Sephirot. If you just Google Sephirot, you find the image. It looks just like that. But I don't think we really talked about, like, what the bunch of eyeballs together, if that was based in mythology at all. And I didn't think it was. I thought it was just like, okay, we took this form and you're like, well, what else can it do? Turn into a bunch of eyeballs, I guess. But apparently this is a thing. So basically the tweet I found was talking about, someone found there's a Cyrillic character that is that shape. It's called the multi-ocular O. And it is, it's in Unicode. You can type it out. You can, like, if you look at our tweet, you can copy and paste the character, and, like, put it in conversations and stuff. It is at small font sizes, just looks like a gibberish blob. But it is basically Sephirotmon or Sakakuman's, you know, when it's chasing around as a big ball of eyeballs, it is that as a sort of character. Wikipedia says the multiocular O is a rare glyph variant of the Cyrillic letter O. This glyph variant can be found in certain manuscripts in the phrase many-eyed seraphim. So, has some connections to Seraphimon and stuff. So, there's that.
And should I be learning this stuff from Tales of Zestiria?
No, because
they don't know how to pronounce seraphim correctly.
Oh, yeah, they pronounce seraphim, right? Seraphim.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a trend in lots of Japanese media, I think, where they just pull these terms because they sound cool and they don't really... Some of it is based on the mythology, you know, some of it is taking some of the concepts of mythology, but by and large is mostly just like things that sound cool. I think that's what they're doing with Seraphim. They're like, angel, Seraphim, cool. Sorry, Seraphim. Here's how they pronounce it in Japanese, actually.
Yeah, is that like an error when they brought it over to English? Who knows?
I mean, Fimu would be a harder thing to say in Japanese than Fimu. I guess they'd be roughly the same. Because, like, you'd have to... Either be Femu or Fimu, they'd be similar. So I guess both would be equally as hard to pronounce. Anyway, we got a pretty thorough email from a Anon. They didn't mention their name, right?
They said they wanted to be Anon. Okay.
So we got some answers from Ash and Andrew, because they sent this in a while ago, and we got some answers from Ash and Andrew we wanted to read. So how about I'll read the question, then you read Ash's answer. And then so the first question... I was listening to another podcast, and there was mention of alternative idea of Zoe's evolutions being Darkmon, D'Arkmon, like John Dark, / Hippogriffmon from the Frontier film, for a human and beast spirits of Wind, respectively, for her instead. What do you guys think about this idea in general? Do you think it would be a less sexist / fanservice alternative to Kazemon / Zephyrmon designs? Also, do you think these alternative evolutions would open up the door for a more competent fighter instead of one that often seemed to be incompetent and unable to win battles like her male counterparts did?
Also, I got Asher and Andrew's response because this person wanted to know all of our thoughts, but I was like, they're never on.
Yeah,
they're never on the episode. So I emailed it to them. And Asher says, I don't find those evolutions any more compelling for Zoe than the ones she has. Honestly, I can deal with the fan service. It's icky, but it's not my main issue with Zoe and how she's portrayed in the show. What I want is for Zoe to have equal power to every character in the show. And also for her not to have to shoulder the burden of representing the entirety of womankind. Just like there's all sorts of boys, there are all sorts of girls. It's not an incredibly world-shaking idea, but Digimon Frontier doesn't express it. Changing her evolutions to designs that exist as evil forces in a movie doesn't excite me. Furthermore, the fact that Hippogriffamon looks more, well, bestial than most of the current beast spirit evolutions actually sends a different, also negative message that women are lesser creatures, quote-unquote, that one might hope to tame. Do I have to read the TLDR version? The issues that I have with Zoe are more related to what she does than how she looks, and I'd be more willing to let her character design slide if she got to participate in what the show focuses on as strength, violence to solve problems. We're reading Andrew's now?
Yep.
Okay. And then Stoppin' Bro number 2, Andrew, says, I can see something like Hippogriffamon working for the beast spirit aside from the bland color scheme, but not D'Arkmon. Joan d'Arc has a lot of association with angels and heaven. Am I doing?
I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure I'm saying it right, but Jeanne d'Arc.
Oh.
Joan of Arc, Jeanne d'Arc.
Why are they spelled the same?
What?
What?
What are you? Joan of Arc is the English.
Oh.
Jeanne d'Arc is French.
I hate.
They're not spelled the same because one of them has
words.
A D.
Yeah, Jeanne one of them has d'Arc. A D, but Joan is spelled this.
No,
what?
It's not.
What?
Oh, I mean, no, this is Andrew. This is Andrew spelling things weirdly.
Oh, okay.
He wrote Joan d'Arc, which is not.
See, this is why I'm confused. Don't make fun of me.
Don't trust
anything. So d'Arc would work better as the human spirit of light, not the human spirit of wind. However, one could easily redesign Kazemon / Ferryman by keeping the same basic design, but instead having clothes like an aviation pilot, like Yuli's DW outfit, or what do these stand for? I can't think in this fast while I'm reading them.
Overwatches Tracer.
Oh, Overwatches Tracer, and wield a weapon of some sort, since both Jet Sylphimon and Ancient Irismon have one. Seriously, none of the evolution lines, aside from fire, light, and darkness, make any sense. So this is actually really well timed because I had not watched this movie in a while. And I was like, I have no idea who these people are. So, but now I did watch the movie because we're recording about it this weekend. So I know who they are. So I guess I can have somewhat of an informed opinion about it. I don't want to spoil something. Okay, is Hippogriffamon present as female?
I haven't seen the movie.
Oh,
yet,
yeah.
So,
damn it.
I mean, since whenever.
Damn.
Long time ago.
Okay.
I mean, that doesn't really. I mean, the design does not lock it into either one or any gender
but like,
of any form. So
yeah.
I think Darkmon does. I mean, it's based on a female historical figure. So I think it. I don't really buy Andrew's argument that it would have to be a more light-inspired... It would have to be more...
Yeah,
light.
I was like, wait, what?
Because it's like, I mean, yeah, Angel, like, there is a lot of light imagery there, but it's like, that's not, like... I guess Andrew's point was that none of the evolutions make sense, but I think it's totally in line for, you know, like, some of the other... I can't remember the other mythological figures, like Garmon and... Or Garmon? No, it's not Garmon. Garumumon, sorry. Which is Kendo Garumon's Japanese name. And a couple other ones like that, like, are mythological figures that are associated... You know, like, I don't think it being associated with heaven means it needs to be light. Because, like... Oh, I guess that is true of the other... You know, like, the Celestial Digimon and stuff. Yeah. But that's actually... The Frontier's handling of elements is... I never really considered how, like, are Seraphimon, Afanimon, and Cherubimon, and Lucimon, to some degree... all light aspect like Koji is? Because that's never, like, really addressed. I mean,
yeah.
Lucimon having light and darkness is addressed in a hokey, awkward, weird way. But I never really got the sense. I mean, it makes sense. It's just they don't really connect the dots. Anyway, I totally agree with Ash's points. It's not really about the design that is so terrible. I mean, the fan service is fine. It's frustrating. But, like, I think we would totally get over it. And it would just be, like, a minor footnote if her abilities were presented in the episodes. And there's so much you can do with her design that still presents her as a competent fighter that is on par with the other fighters.
Yeah, it's like her design currently is made into a joke. Like, it's the butt of the fan service jokes, and that's, like, her primary mode of fighting, too. And it's like, no. There are many layers of this that I can't accept.
And it's a combination of all those layers together that makes it particularly frustrating. Yeah, and so there are more questions in this email. Speaking of Zoe, she's the only female character this season, so I've thought about this and come up with three scenarios to combat that with talking points under each. I'd like all of your opinions about each of these three and which sounds the most interesting to you. So, three different scenarios. First is Koji as a girl. I'm not sure how accurate this is, but I've heard that in the development stages, Koji was initially meant to be a girl, but they decided to go with him being a boy because it would have been too similar to Rika from Tamers. I haven't heard this story.
Well, I have not either.
So... I mean, it's very possible, but we don't have any sources to confirm or deny that. So keep it with a grain of salt, but it's an interesting concept. And then two other scenarios. B, Koichi as a girl. Koichi as a girl. This idea would be the first time we would see an evil female sixth... Did I say female? An evil female sixth ranger, and also the first time for a genuinely threatening female villain that didn't veer into comedic relief or fan service. Though Maki from Tri might count as this, depending on how you perceive her and where the waters go for the final two films. And C, both Koji and Koichi as girls. This idea would be the first time Digimon would have an even number of boys and girls on a team, and the first time for sibling sisters. Do sisters ever have Kari?
Yoli has
a
brother, right?
Yoli, on paper, has a bunch of siblings, and they just, like...
Yes.
I mean, she wished them out of existence at the end of the movie, at the end of season two, so...
Okay. And they don't exist in Tri, so...
So what's Asher's response?
Asher says, I'm more interested in Koji as a girl because I'd love to see what they would do with his wolf and samurai motifs, and also because I happen to find Koji more interesting than Koichi. I'd hope they leave him intact for girl Koji, who I guess would be named something light-like. That said, having both the twins be girls also appeals to me because having an evenly balanced Digimon team would be amazing. And also, I'd still get what I want, re Stoic Samurai Warrior Koji. For more information on Lady Warriors of Feudal Japan, Asher has some Wikipedia article on Ona Bugeisha? Yes. I'm going to roll with it.
I should look at the article, but I'm guessing that is just the kanji for woman, which is Ona, Bu being weapon, and Geisha meaning... Actually, not geisha, but I mean, the same form as geisha. It's apparently female martial. Yeah, it's the kanji is female military, female weapon artist, basically. Female martial artist.
All right.
Was a type of female warrior belonging to the Japanese nobility. Many women engaged in battle alongside samurai men. They are members of the Bushi samurai class in feudal Japan and were trained in the use of weapons to protect their household, family, and honor in times of war. So that's pretty cool. And an element that does not seem present at all in the Japanese media that is popular in the West.
Yeah, no.
So that would be a very cool thing to bring into things.
Okay. Andrew, Softman Bro number 2, in response to Koji as a girl, says, kind of ties into the first question, basically gives Zoe the lights... spirits and have Diarkmon as the human one or Kojiko, whatever. In general, it would give an interesting power dynamic to the team if the course of the plot was exactly the same. However, this would easily backfire and they could easily make Kojiko another Hikari, especially since Frontier loves prophecies too, and give the awesome power-ups to a different character. And then in response to Koichi as a girl, wait, Koichi isn't a girl? Honestly, in my opinion, a Kojiko wouldn't be that different from
Koichiko.
He's just adding Koichiko. Yes, I get it. I can't read. It's the issue. Koichiko wouldn't be that different from the regular Koichi personality-wise, although the gender change could potentially change a lot of the character's experiences prior to entering the digital world. She would dress up as Koichi, and then everything would pretty much play out in the same way. Alternatively, we can easily nix the light and darkness siblings thing and have a wildcard sixth ranger female character with no prior connection to the others, especially since that plot thread comes nearly out of nowhere anyways. And then last one is both of them being a girl. Having them both as girls would definitely shake things up. It would be great to have an even ratio, but somehow I don't see the show being that much different overall plot-wise. Though it could potentially fix Zoe's character development and her problem with fitting in with other girls. On the other hand, somehow, this could potentially make JP far worse, though, since he would also have to interact with the cold Kojiko and distant Koichiko on top of Zoe. Sorry, so hard, because they both begin with K. Ugh, okay. Anyway, can you imagine all those great comedic moments where JP goes to Zoe, since she's the only girl who will unfortunately pay any attention to him?
So my thoughts on this is that, like, I don't see much value in considering the hypotheticals here. Unless you want to go down the route of AU, alternative universe fanfiction and stuff, and then, like, in terms of considering how it could affect future series, I feel like it's just, like, no future series is going to take the Frontier mold and tweak it just a little bit and then redo that. It's always be so different. And so the idea of having a team that is fully even gender split would be amazing. And it's just in the abstract, I'm concerned that I don't think it ever really happened. It seems like even with Tri being marketed to the female audience these days, it unfortunately with Atmon still seems like they're going down a route of the thing for younger kids is marketed towards boys because we can sell them toys. the thing marketed to an older audience is marketed towards women because we can sell them merchandise. And we can sell them, like, you know, cute boys. And
yes.
So it's like, I mean, in some respect, that's a model that totally fits. You have a primarily male cast when they're young so that the kids can identify with them and buy their toys. Then once they're grown up and they're older and the women can objectify them, then you sell them being objectified. And then, like, it kind of, it's a conveniently fit, not cycle, but, like, both of those. So even though the market demographic shifts in that regard, it still primarily focuses on the boys. And this is something that, like, and there's a lot of speculation before Final Fantasy XV came out about how, like, if there'd be a big feminist backlash against the game because it has so few women characters, even though it is marketed towards women in a way that, like, it is objectifying the boys and, like, you're supposed to be objectifying them. So, but yeah.
I mean, but that's the thing about women's media is that I feel like it is always far more gender even than. Like, there are certainly things that are, like women, free.
Women's media in the West? Or what kind of women's media are you talking about?
Both. In shoujo manga, it's much more normally, you know, the main character is a female, and then, like, okay, sure, I guess you get, like, harem things. Like, Shuji Yuji is just like, okay, yeah, she's just with a bunch of dudes, and but the conflict is, like, with her and her other female friend and stuff, like. So I feel like most things are somewhat gender even. It's only more recently that the stuff that's just, like, free, where it's like, you're supposed to objectify cute dudes, has really come on my radar as a bigger thing. And I don't know, it's just, like, female media is better at this than dude media.
But the kind of discussion points you're talking about not having a gender balanced cast is still emblematic. If you consider try a female targeted media product, it is still has that frustration. I'm sorry, I'm just, like, distracted because I'm going to our YouTube page and not seeing the live thing. And I'm like, uh-oh, spaghetti. I think it's still there because I think we're still streaming. Yeah, it's just unfortunate because I would hope that over the course of the series we'd see a trend towards more gender equality, but it seems the opposite. I mean, Atmon aside, because it's, you know, the season's in order, we don't really know exactly how the full cast will turn out, but, like, the trend definitely went the opposite direction, that Adventure had the most female characters, and then, like, they got less and less and less to the point where Frontier is just,
yeah, but how did that really succeed for them? Like, because everybody still loves Adventure the most.
You know, it seems like they've learned the wrong lessons. They don't seem to take away from that, like, we should try to model Adventure in the gender balance. What they seem to have taken away from that is, like, let's be more conservative in certain regards, and in those gender regards. I mean, so in Atmon, there's one female character with a digivice. Yes. There is another female character who doesn't have a digivice. But she's, like, not super present, and so it is, like, it's kind of Frontier, and Crossroads is a similar situation where it's, like, there's only ever one female character at a time in the group. There's, like, in the first chunk of the show, one character in the group, one character not in the group, then second chunk of the show, there's a character in the group and not in the group. Actually, in the third chunk, they're just, the main group has no female characters.
Oh, good.
That's fun. I mean, there are, like, side characters and stuff, but. Yeah, it's
I don't know, it's hard to play a game of would Koji or Koichi be better as girls, because then I feel like it's the internal struggle of, like, you don't want gender to matter, so, like, you could just swap their personnel, like, they could just be a girl and have the exact same personalities, but at the same time I'm like, no, that would affect something of their character, because society would treat them differently and stuff, and, like,
even if their character was identical, like, their character details were identical, we would read them differently, the other characters react to them differently and stuff, and so, like, I'm just thinking, like, Koji being all loner and stuff in the beginning of the show, if that was a female character, there'd be a very different dynamic to that, I think. There would be a much more, like, I don't know. Like, there already is a kind of, somewhat of a narrative of, like, Koji, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. You really want to be with us? I feel like if there were a female character doing the same actions, it'd be a much more overt leaning into that. But I just don't want to go too far down this hypothetical route, because it's like, I say, I think there'd be more of this in that scenario. I'm like, I don't know that. No one can really know that. It's like, to assume that we would know exactly how something would play out with these creative changes implemented is totally undermining the creative artists involved. Their art, like, to be like, oh, this is exactly how it would have, I don't know, I feel kind of sketchy about that, because like, they're artists and they make creative decisions, and we agree with them, we disagree with them, but like, we can't predict them. But I think some degree of things we can like, speculate on, that if there were multiple girls or JPs, things like JP's dynamic, as we see it now, would have to be totally different if there are multiple girls. I think there's potential for it to be even grosser, though. There's potential for him to, like, you know,
there's a potential for him to pit the girls against each other. Like, he clearly likes one.
I was thinking more like that he would show affection to one of them, get rebuked, and then go to the other one, and then like get, and like constantly bouncing around them based on who. I mean, like, I think Andrew mentioned that, like, in Andrew's envisioned scenario, Zoe would be the only one that would show him affection. And the other ones wouldn't, or something. But
right, but I think that the way that I see that actually manifesting is that, like, because JP, you know, has been bullied and has his own body issues, that, like, if he likes Zoe so much, he would then be mean to the other one in some way. Like,
you're saying everyone with body issues is mean to people?
I'm just saying JP is not, like, the most tact guy.
He also has behavior reminiscent of bullies in the beginning of the show. So I could see that. Another dynamic I think would have to be very different. Like we said before, having one female character who stands in for all female audience is frustrating. It kind of reminds me of the dynamic of, like, women who try and join predominantly male or all male gaming circles. I'm thinking of this specific example. I guess I don't really follow circles where there are this many, like, men dominated groups or gatherings anymore. Like, I guess that used to be a thing that was more on my radar. This is a story from, I think it was from Ashley Birch of Hey, I Switch to Play In and several video games now. She's the main character in Horizon Zero Dawn, I think. I think that's a thing.
Really?
I think so. Yep. Anyway. but, like, I think it's a story I heard long ago when Hop had a podcast. About her, like, trying to get into maybe it was Netrunner? No, I don't think she was ever into Netrunner. It was something she was trying to get into, and, like, she was the only girl there, and felt like... And this also might not be Ashley Birch at all. Maybe I'm totally drafting a different person's story onto her, but that she would join this group and be, like, feel super compelled to, like, be the best one in the group, because if she wasn't, then it was representing all of womankind. And
yes,
and this is not like an isolated, I'm not saying like, oh, this one person had this one, but like, this is something that I've heard from you a lot. Actually, I haven't heard, you haven't heard you explicitly state it, but just in the way that you've talked about your hockey experience in high school and being like the girl on the guys team, that like, people would assume things based on your gender, would make conclusions based on your performance about the gender, and like,
yeah, because you start at the bottom, and like, even if you raise your way to the middle, it's like, well, they're just going to treat you like you're in the bottom half still, you know, like, they're just going
to... The angle that I want to talk about more was how, like, if you're average as a girl, like, they're going to look at, on that so much different, like, than if a guy came in and was average. Like, if a girl comes in and, like, loses a bunch, they're going to be like, wow, so women are inferior because they're losing to a bunch of people. But it's like, if a guy comes in and gets to an average level, then it's like, yeah, that's expected. But, like, I think there's, like, different expectations, and you're also... You know, you're like, every failure stands out more because it's representing the entire gender, and it's gross. And that, I think that dynamic is always so. Even if I'm like, oh, things might be a little bit more problematic if there are multiple female characters for JP to bounce off of, I think just inherently having multiple female characters prominent is always going to be better.
I mean,
in almost any situation, I
would probably agree with that.
and then we get gray areas like Cross Wars or Atmon, where it's like there are multiple female characters who are background decoration for most episodes. And, like, they have, like, one line, so they're there. I don't know. But there's definitely gray areas in between having no female characters and having several, like, adventure. Now onto more comments specifically about this episode, about episode 404. So Zoe's my favorite comment about the Christopher Walken impression. They said, I definitely understand the Christopher Walken impression, although when you were trying to think of movies he was in, I couldn't think of any either. Although he was recently the voice of King Louie in Disney's live-action Jungle Book. My thoughts of him are also related to SNL and the I Gotta Have My Cowbell skit, which is pretty famous. And I also, that one I never really saw on TV, the cowbell sketch, but I heard people talking about it.
I still think I have not actually watched.
that one's really famous, but for some reason I had never seen that one on TV, because it's from the 80s, I think. It's pretty old.
Oh.
But it's like, it's a pretty big cultural touchstone. A lot of people make references to it and stuff. But yeah, it is really weird how Christopher Walken is so... I swear he's like well known for being well known more than he is well known for like being in culturally relevant roles to our generation. I mean, I think there's a generational gap.
I think
there
that's
too,
why but... I just don't care. Like,
and we talked about Emperor Greymon's voice being sounding weird. Like that Takui's my second must be doing something weird. And so Zoe's my favorite said, also Emperor Greymon is not voiced by Michael Reyes, who does Takuya and his Spirit Evolutions, but Dave Wittenberg, who has voiced the Trailmon this season, as well as Henry in Tamers. And that's an interesting factoid. Now we can refer to him as Emperor Greymon is a Trailmon parenthesis Takuya. Ember Moto in the comment section also said, why does Shroomimon tell Duskmon that he was human and how he came to the digital world? What purpose does that serve? Wouldn't it be counterproductive to his plans? And I thought that's a bit, actually, have you thought about this a bit? Like, why Shroomimon tells...
Why does Shroomimon tell?
And I think it actually does make some sense. Like, I think it makes sense that, like, if Shroomimon grafting the Spirit of Darkness onto Koichi was because of Koichi having some of these dark thoughts to remind him of those dark thoughts and to make him feel jealous of his brother, helps fuel that. And, like, that could have been what, like, awakened the Beast Spirit, like, allowed him to graft on the Beast Spirit too and stuff. So, like, I think it makes sense.
It was definitely a dump that was like, you have forgotten how dark you truly are, Koichi.
Right.
Let me tell you.
It makes sense in the BS framework of him being something about jealous of his brother making him the true representative of darkness. Like, that's still silly and ridiculous. But, like, if you accept that, then the other things I think make some sense. And another comment from Ember Moto. Okay, so Koji clearly has memories of his mom, so why doesn't he remember Koichi? How old were they when the parents separated? And...
No, it doesn't make sense. You're not going to make it make sense.
it's very true. I mean, but just seeing that laid out there, that, like, he has clear memories of his mother, does not have memories of his brother. Like, those are from the same time in his life. It just...
He has a picture of his mom, but no pictures of...
That actually could explain the memory. Like,
yeah, but why wouldn't he have a picture of his brother? Like, why wouldn't there be pictures of them together?
But that fits into the explanation that makes no sense of why they've lied about this whole thing. Like, if you accept that they've lied about it for whatever reason, and he's not supposed to be told about his brother, the fact that he has the picture of his mother could remind him of those memories and keep them intact. Whereas if he does not have anything to remind him of his brother, he might just forget those memories.
It's still bullshit.
Yeah, it's still because, like, the fundamental premise I'm asking you to accept is BS. And Jared Jenkins in the comment section, we had a couple back and forths with this comment, but the basic thing is, on the Ophanimon representation of mercy and love, the three archangels are supposed to represent God's knowledge, justice, and love. All three are major aspects, and just because this is, you know, talking about Western perception and Western Christian perception of God and religion. All three are major aspects. What I know of the love of God is it is the most powerful force in the world. She is not lesser than the other two because of it, and represents the thing that we really most on, since she is representing a power and an important part of Christianity. I mean, you had a couple back and forths about this. My main point about it is that, like, it's not that we're saying love is a weak force in that triangle. It's just that there is a trend and a frustrating trend of always relegating two women to that role. And it is.
Yeah.
Like, is
even from adventure. That's.
Yeah. Like Sora, right? Having the Crest of Love and stuff. And I think even when you look at it, like, from the Christianity angle, it's like, we're not trying to say that, like, love and Christianity is an unimportant factor, but when you think about, like, what is cool to kids, I think it's definitely true that, like, love is, like, looking at the crest and you're like, oh yeah, courage, friendship, love. You're like, it's I think what is cool to kids, it is the least exciting and the most boring and, like, mature. You know, like, I guess, like, things like reliability are also in a similar boat. They're also kind of like...
Yeah, but Joe, you're not... Yeah.
Sincerity, too. I mean, sincerity was definitely the one as a kid that I was like, what does that even mean? I'm confused. Like,
what's sincerity? Sincerity is me?
Yeah.
So that's also copy.
sure. But anyway, it's definitely the one that's least exciting to kids, but it's more that just... that it reinforces the narrative that this is all that women can do. And this is the thing that, you know, women are the strongest at this, and that's the only thing that they're good at is love. And
yeah, and it just goes into a narrative of, like, I don't know, the gross narrative of, like, but women are so respected because they're so empathetic and loving, and I'm like, that's just not true from the perspective of society. Like,
I think
societal
it's true.
Reinforcements.
I think it's generally true that women are more in touch with their emotions. Because society reinforces that, because society says that boys shouldn't cry, that boys shouldn't express their feelings openly, and, like, the patriarchal society structure enforces that men aren't in touch with their feelings. So by nature of that, women are generally more in touch with their emotions, just by nature of, you know, like that being men being told they shouldn't be. And I guess there's a similar conversation going on recently about the character of Mantis in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, because she's a female character whose ability is empathy.
Yeah.
And that's literally, like, someone who's in touch with their emotions and can, and I think there's, I don't know enough about superhero comics lore, but apparently that's a pretty common thing for women to be represented as. So there'd be another example. And it's like, okay, this is a great power. This is a really important thing in daily life. We don't want to, like, say it is a crappy thing or a bad thing. It is actually a really important thing. And we wish people in real life had this much more. But in the context of a superhero movie, it is the one that feels the most like, really? That's it? And it reinforces, like, that's how women are always represented. And it's like, I think the thing about sexist situations like this is that, like, if flipping the gender would make you feel like that would be a completely different situation, that is a sign that something is up. And
right, like, what if Ophanimon was justice?
Well, no, okay. I getting a little bit away from the, because I think to some degree the roles they've been given in Frontier is mostly irrelevant. It's basically just like a detail in the info dump. It's not super. It's not like Ophanimon did. There's no actions that are affected by these choices, these allocations. I mean, I read into, like, Cherubimon being, you know, the one who's in touch with lore, and that's why he kind of regressed history and stuff. But, like, I feel like in the text of the show itself, they are not overtly, there aren't really many actions that are based on this.
I feel like this required this much explanation of anything.
but the thing about Guardians of the Galaxy and the role of Mantis, who is an empath and, you know, can read people's emotions and kind of influence their emotions, I feel like it would be really weird, not in a bad way, but it would definitely stand out if there was a male character with that ability. I'm curious if anyone has examples of this in, because I'm sure there are examples and I just don't know about them. But, like, in a big blockbuster movie like that, to have a male character whose primary aspect is that they are in touch with their emotions and can help people get in touch with their emotions would feel weird to me. And I think that's just a sign that there is a sexist trend to that representation. So,
My feelings about this were just, yes, love is not lesser. It feels crappy from a gender representation standpoint. But again, Frontier is bad at this because Frontier, like, if you accept bad people, there's only Ranamon. Good group, there's only Zoe.
Wait.
Subgroup.
Oh, I thought you said Ranamon. I'm like, Ranamon's in Tamers.
Ranamon. They have the same.
But you said accepting bad people and Ranamon is bad.
What? I said, no, oh. I said in the bad group of people, there is one female, and it's Ranamon.
You said accepting with an A. I thought you said accepting with an E.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, right, you're saying there are very few female
Zoe,
characters.
Yeah. Side character, human people, there's four, and only one of them is a girl. Then the triangle of angels is one of them. It's just like, when you're only going to have one of something, you're never going to win the game of stereotypes. This is just a fact.
Yeah. And it reminds me of, and this is a really basic and old video, but I think it was one of the first feminist frequency videos about, I forget what it was called, but it was about, I think it was like the very first tropes versus women in video games video. Might have been before that Kickstarter project. And the example I'm thinking of is the Koopa kids in the Mario games, and how, like, the female gender is considered a trait. It's like, here's the one who, like, wears X. Here's the one who's, like, a magician. And here's the one that is girl. They have a bow. And it's like, that, like, when you think of gender as being, that you think of, like, maleness as being the norm, and, like, gender and anything isn't female is just, like a little bit of window dressing for variety on top of the male thing. I mean, there's whenever you're in that angle, whenever you're in that perspective, it's going to be, things are going to be wrong and gross. And by having, in all those groups you mentioned, only one character being female, that's how they all read. It's like, yeah, you can look at it and be like, okay, there were 4 to 5 characters in the end, but like in each group, it's treated as like, here's this group and here's the girl. That's her trait, is that she's the girl. I mean, obviously Random has other factors, Ophanim has other, like there are other character traits about them. It's not as binary. The thing that stands out about that, the Koopa Kid example, is that like they don't have much characterization. They don't have much to their designs. So you can just be like, the only thing about this character design is that she has a bow. But these are more, slightly more fleshed out characters, so it's not that drastic, but it is still there. And I guess the other thing about this comment, just in general about, because we didn't really make this connection to those three attributes being representative of attributes that are important in Christian, I wouldn't say myth, but it's not, in Christian.
It was in Christian myth, wow.
In Christian religion, I mean, mostly because three-fourths of Haggas are not Christian at all. Ashley's the only...
I'm so bad at it, you guys. All so bad.
So, but I mean, I think it's an interesting thing that I wish we had noticed, because in our, in 406, which we've already recorded, we had a lengthy discussion about the Western influences on Frontier, and that would have been an interesting thing for us to notice and call out there. So just pretend that we mentioned it there. I'll cut me saying it now into there.
Yeah. Examples we were given are Captain Planet. Apparently a boy was given heart.
Hmm.
And does Charles Xavier count?
Huh.
I feel like I have to think.
I don't think Charles Xavier counts, because like I think there's a difference between telepathy and empathy. Like that, like it's one thing when it's reading minds, and it's another thing when it's like reading minds in a way that is only about emotion. And I think that, because I mean, I think X-Men is like pretty good about telepathy not being a gendered thing. But empathy. I mean, I don't know if there are empaths in X-Men lore. But I think it's not so much that, like, telepathy is broad enough that it's not really just emotion, just love. But we should go, because we've been running long. Now that we don't have the limit of an hour from Mixlr, we...
Silly.
Homer Nautic on Twitter said, isn't it weird that the wolf... I guess this was in reply to some silly post I made. But it's just generally... about Koji and Koichi. Isn't it weird that the wolf is the light one and the lion is darkness? So that's, Koji's Lobamon, wolf, light. Koichi's Loemon is darkness. And Homer Onek said, I feel like it should be the reverse. Like wolves and night, moons and Twilight Princess and werewolves, and lions and Aslan and Pokemon Sun, etc. I think they're going for an intentional reversal there. I hadn't made that connection before. You're just smiling at me. Why are you smiling at me?
I'm just like, I just feel like Frontier doesn't care.
I think it was intentional, but I don't have too many examples. But I mean, yeah, I think wolves are definitely associated with the night and with the moon and...
the howling.
And lions. I mean, I guess the Homer Nautic mentioned, I think of Aslan and Pokemon Sun design, whoever that Pokemon is. But so maybe there aren't that many other examples, and it's not a very big trend, but I think... it fits, and who knows? Maybe they're going for it, maybe they weren't. Golex Ex Machina on Tumblr. This was in response to one of our recaps, which we posted on social media. I referred to Emperor Greymon as Giant Sword Greymon, and Magna Gurumon as Giant Gun Gurumon. And they said, I think you have misidentified Giant Sword Greymon and Giant Gun Gurumon. And they linked images of Victory Greymon and Z Gurumon, which, yeah, they are... I mean, Victor Greymon is just Greymon with a giant sword, and Z Gurumon is Gurumon with a giant gun.
That's dope.
They're pretty cool. Should I have images? No, we're not going to have images in the show notes. I was like, oh yeah.
I want that.
What, images of them or them in general? You want them?
Just them. They look cool.
You want to like sleep with that giant gun Gurumon?
What?
I meant like as a pillow. Anyway,
okay.
Anyway, Nathan Hartwig at As Great As Nate on Twitter said... this was in response to, I guess it was just one of the images of the legendary warriors that are shown in the flashback of the next chunk of episodes. Anyway, the fact that they didn't dig into the history of legendary warriors is one of my biggest problems with this show. And at first when I read this, I was like, didn't dig into the history enough? Come on, they dug into it over and over. They don't tell you anything, though. They don't tell you anything about the legendary warriors at all. And like,
they're just like, they appeared and saved the world.
Yeah. Like, it's like, how does band of 10 warriors appear and save
them?
Like,
yeah, I want a series about them and how they got together. And we're like, you know what? Let's go. Like,
and there's so much interesting. The fact that they repeated the lore over and over and over again and told the same, like every time they told like 90% of the same details and like 10% of new information and didn't go into stuff like this. And okay, I can understand it if they were from a lost generation. But, like, they handed over power directly to the three angels. They should have known them personally. Like, they could, like, Ophanimon could have been like, yo, I'm going to tell you stories about these Digimon that were my friends. They helped put me in power. But no, they're just, like, completely lost. They're completely ancient. They're, the fact that they don't really have, I guess the maybe this was replying to the post that I made complaining about how if you look up official artwork for these characters, you can find card artwork because they have, like, you know, official Bandai artwork for the cards, but they don't have any anime artwork because, except for one of them, I think. I forget which one it is, but one of them is in Cross Wars, is in some other series. But for the most part, they're never rendered in the anime, except for this one shot when, I forget what it is, the beginning of the Royal Knights arc, when that prophecy Digimon appears and, like, shows them. And they're in the yellow glow, and it's just a group of them all together, and that's, like, the only image you get in the anime. And then they have, like, profile, they have sprites from the game, whatever, but it's just a shame that there's so much more to show of them, and I guess they had designs. I don't know why they didn't want to invest in showing them more, but whatever. Whatever. That is the Frontier noise. Whatever. Okay, and now it is time for Q&A. We should probably, skip through some of these and rush through the ones we do answer just because we are running so long for time. And I'm trying to figure out how I can check how long I've been running.
I don't know how to. Too long.
We're going to stream Cyber Sleuth out of this, so we need to get to that. Yoshiman 400 on Reddit asked Ashley if you'd heard of something, but we haven't heard of it. Maybe listeners have heard of it. But he asked, just checking, did Ashley ever hear the tragedy of Darth Truby the Digital? It sounds like an infamous fic, but I've never heard of it, and we couldn't find anything about it.
Without any context, like, and Google does not give me any clues. I'm just like, I have no idea what this is.
And Dizzy and Lost on Tumblr, I think they actually asked this before Arcosa Clash. Oh, no.
But yes, these are from last episode that we didn't answer.
Okay. But I guess I also asked the question Coastal Clash, so maybe. Anyway, but the question is best fight scene so far.
Well, you know, the one that Asher and I couldn't remember at all for the Coastal Clash was actually a good answer.
Gallimon versus Beelzemon.
Yeah.
The weird part, the frustrating, when I was listening back, because I was editing it, I couldn't remember what it was. I was like, what is the answer? What?
See? See? It's so hard.
I don't know. It's hard to classify it as a fight, but I kind of want to put the Beelzemon trying to free Jerry and failing and using Fist of the Beast King. That's not a fight.
This is not a fight.
I'll show you a fight.
I'll show you a fight. You want me to come over there?
Because, like,
Ashley.
We're both of Pixel, Ashley.
No.
It's, as much as I like the Beelzemon versus Gallimon fight, it's just, I don't think it's nearly as emotionally impactful. It's, like, impactful for the events of the series, totally, but, like, and it is, like, surprising that it went there, but I think the, what I recall emotionally affecting me the most is definitely the Beelzemon. He's fighting the D-Reaper. He, like, it's totally a thing. Beelzemon, Blast Mode versus, I was like, really? Is it Blast Mode? No, it's only Blast Mode because it's Blast Mode Beautiful. That's the line. Do you have an answer for, but the question is, I guess I wrote down into two segments, either Frontier or all of Digimon. So I guess all of Digimon, I'd say that. Do you have any other all of Digimon?
I mean, again, I'm going to stick with Beelzemon, anything. Other fights in Digimon, you're going to stick with that,
but you didn't remember it.
No, yeah, but other fights in Digimon don't have any emotion to them. They're all just like, I need a Puppetmon, TK fighting Puppetmon.
Now I'm trying to think of Frontier specifically.
Frontier and specifically.
Oof. I don't know.
The initial fight with Duskman, that was fun.
Yeah, I really that's not my answer. Just cause I appreciate Duskman building up Duskman as a threatening villain there, but I don't think the fight was that.
But he dabs.
Yeah, he does dab. It's worth it for the dabbing. But it's hard to really find a fight scene. I think I kind of want to go with Cherubimon just because it feels like the ultimate confrontation with Cherubimon, because it just feels pretty impactful and interesting, and there's just a lot more going on than Digimon fights normally have, I feel like. But it's not, it's kind of like it stands out from the rest of Frontier and doesn't really stand out the rest of the series that much. I'm still not like, I'm like, oh, this sucks, but like I like Frontier, I just don't like this aspect of it.
Boo.
Maybe I'll think of something later, but for now, that's all I can think of. Let's answer one more question, and the rest we can do next episode.
Okay.
Actually, I guess there are a couple that are specific to... Let's do the ones that are specific to this arc.
Okay.
So this one... So we got a couple from Cool Surfer, who is Marcus, right?
Yes.
In our Slack. And he asked, would you add anything to the Rose Morning Star arc to make it better? I can't think of anything specifically that I... Like, a definite thing that would... Like, an obvious missing thing I would have added. I think it's a little weird structurally to divert the fight with having Ice Devimon.
Oh, yeah. Can we just remove Ice Devimon?
I mean, it's I guess, nice they, like, you know, broke up a long, monotonous fight, because we have complained when there's, like, a long, monotonous fight going on for several episodes. So it at least did that, I guess. That's
No, and then it tried to hype up, this is even more menacing!
Yeah.
No.
I just don't have anything to add, because it was a perfect arc. It was a perfect experience.
Can I rewrite all of it? And then see where...
Make it less dark. Turn other
buttons. I'm going to put a tree that has color in it in there.
I'm a color. Just color.
Just colors.
I guess... I'm going to say, oh, we've been talking how we wish that Legendary Warriors got more backstory, but no, that wouldn't have worked well there. That really would have been a good thing to...
Less of the same backstory, maybe more actual details of anything.
I feel like the backstory we got there was actually pretty revealing, because we got to see, from Ophanimon's perspective, what the conflict was that drove Cherubimon to his evil ways and stuff, and then we got to see them all interacting and stuff. And I think the
yes, more that one instance is fine.
But the more backstory of Legendary Warriors, I think, would have worked a lot better in the Royal Knights arc. Just because, like, it seemed like the perfect point in the story to, like, as soon as you're introducing Lusamon again, even if they're not fighting Lusamon for that arc, like, they're fighting the henchmen of Lusamon, they know he's coming back, to, like, it seems so perfect. Like, you're recentering, like, they've beaten Cherubimon, you think that's the final villain, but then they're like, no, actually, there's more, and it's like, the original conflict the Legendary Warriors fought was against Lusamon. It seems like a no-brainer to, like, as they're hyping up for that fight, to kind of learn something about how they fought in the first time. And they try to bring that up in, like, the third to last episode or something as, like, an afterthought. Like, wait, how'd they do it? Oh, I guess they combine light and darkness. And it's like,
also, their spirits come and, like, talk to them as people. That would be cool.
They don't talk. They just sound stupid. It's stupid. They do talk. I guess they do talk. That's also stupid. They really... The Royal Knights arc would have been a perfect... I'm just thinking about, like, drawing out the structure for the season and being, like... Because the Royal Knights arc definitely feels filler-y in a lot of regards. I'm not saying it's totally filler, but, like, it feels like they had stuff they had to pad for, and this seems like a no-brainer thing to pad. Sorry, we got kind of diverted from the original topic of the Rose Morning Star arc, and we're just talking about the next arc, but... yeah, Rose Morning Star arc, I feel like there isn't anything obvious to add. It's just, like, the most frustrating things are about the tone and the color and everything. And Marcus also asked, did your guys' impressions change on any characters this arc? I don't think it really changed any of my impressions. Maybe, like, reminding me Koichi isn't as interesting as I thought.
Yeah, Koichi. Built up to be way cooler than he actually is.
Yeah. Especially looking back, I'm like, I think in episode 400, I was like, oh yeah, Koichi's my favorite character. No, never mind.
No, JK.
I think I realized that while I was saying it then, though. and Marcus's final question, Jeff, are you ready for the showdown against the Softman Bros? Your Softman Bro? Do you believe you have a shot to win? This is in regards to the Clash that we were recording this weekend, which will be for 407.
Yes.
Which will not be for a while, but yeah, that should be fun.
I don't think I widely shared that I made the questions this time, so Jeff can be the participant against the Softman bro.
Yeah, I'm pretty, not worried, but I'm like, I bet I'm going to be surprised about how bad I am at it. Like, I'm probably going to be like, oh, yeah, I know how to do this. Oh, wait, no, it's so much harder on your side.
I think I specifically designed, the first one has 9 possible answers, so that's going to be great. It's going to be dope. Oh, jeez. I look forward to all of your stumbling.
And I think that's it for questions this time. So we skipped over some more and we'll answer some of those in the next episode. But we are running at 30 minutes long, so we need to wrap this up. Okay, Ashley, what do you want to hug plug, chug your mug? I'm going to plug The Handmaid's Tale, which is a Hulu original TV series based on a novel that I feel kind of ashamed that I did not know about before, because it apparently is a
wow,
seminal piece of feminist literature, and I am just ignorant
it's
of feminist literature.
It's a seminal piece of, like, dystopian literature, dystopia, like sci-fi generally.
There's no sci-fi.
It's considered, all dystopians are considered science fiction. Well, anyway, for no other reason.
The TV series is extremely bleak, so I have, like, hesitations to recommend. It's not a, like, surefire you need to be watching this. It's like a, I think everyone should try it out, but, like, I think it's definitely, depending on what kind of, like, your mood is and, like, what you want from media, if you have, like, a really depressing day and you just need to relax, it probably isn't a good thing for that, because it is not relaxing. It's a depressing dystopia that is kind of, like, frighteningly not similar to our current landscape, but it's like you can connect some dot that is like the extreme version of trends that have been happening recently, mostly in America, but outside of America too. And it's not a direct, like, this is what's going to happen soon. It's more of a, like, you know, things that have been uncomfortable recently, draw those to their kind of ultimate conclusion. And this is what you get. And it is depressing, but I think what I find most, like, even though it deals with all these, like, heavy concepts, it is still an interesting and exciting world to learn more about. I want to learn more about it, and I don't know. It's good. It's well made. It's, like, really well acted. I mean, I don't think the writing isn't, like, amazing. And I'm like, oh my god, I'm blown away by the writing, but the acting is really great, and it's just good. It's good TV. Ashley.
Okay. I don't know. I'll just go with a song. It's called
Of Ice and Fire.
No. Yeah. No. It's called In This Moment by Andy Dugreed and Audrey Gallagher. And I don't know, it's a trance song. It's kind of old. Old by EDM standards, being like 2013. Who knows? It's like,
before I was born.
I know. God. And I don't know. I really like the melody. I could tell you weird things about myself about why I like the song, but I choose not to. Yeah. I don't know. If you like trance, go listen to it. It's fun.
On that note, you can find the full show notes and comment thread of this episode at podigis.com/404.5. Jump in the comments to let us know what you thought about this episode. Like, who is the romanticist ship in Digimon, and how Jeff Word's not able to them. You can also let us know your thoughts via social media, email, or with the Will thread, the Digimon subreddit thread for episode 404, or by having so many audio issues in your first YouTube live podcast that
you hear it. Record a new... I'm sitting in a room where you just have...
For some context, in our before we actually started recording, we almost did a I'm sitting in a room, if that's a important piece of experimental music thing that is the same audio recorded back on itself over and over until it becomes nonsense. And that's almost what we do with YouTube, by listening back to ourselves as we were trying to test the audio and then hearing it and recording it. Anyway, our new Agunimon artwork this season is by Jupi Amajo on DeviantArt.
Podigis is made possible with your support on Patreon, including support from our champion Patrimon, the infamous Diabjomon. No, wait, I did it wrong. Yeah. Tokujo on Twitter.
Diabjoman is not.
Yeah, Diabjoman is not infamous, but Tokujo at is Tokujo infamous. On Twitter is Joe Kido, Kailunamon, Kaiserwashi, Michael Penne, and Red from fellow Digimon podcast Breakfast with Digimon. Breakfast, I can't pronounce words. Our ultimate Patrimon, Alvaro Crimson Mode, David Graumon, and our mega Patrimon, Marcus, who submitted all the questions. Woo, Marcus! And Sam Kriwagamon, who is on the Moncast, which compares Pokemon and Digimon. And he wants you to check out his partner's Tumblr. Tumblr.
Don't check out his Tumblr. I don't know what that would be.
I don't know what that is.
If you can find it. I'm going to make a joke about it being like a mug, but I'm like, no, that's a Tumblr. That is also Tumblr.
Yeah, he just tumbles. He's a gymnast. I don't know. Just go to purple-pixel.tumblr. I can't. I just can't. I just give up.
If you also want to be a cool Patrimon like them, then go check out our Patreon, where for $1 a month, you can join our private group chat on Slack, where we have been talking about things.
About how we want to impeach Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. I've mostly been ignoring the politics channel. There are lots of channels, and you can choose to ignore them or participate them in what you like. And if you're like, I can't deal with politics right now. Oh, we started a like complaint about work recently.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
That's Ashley's favorite channel. That's my... you can also get cool stuff like commentary tracks and behind-the-scenes notes for $3 a month. And I think the next commentary track we're going to do is Fully Cooly, which is exciting. A new sticker and button every month for $10 a month. Ability to choose episode topics for $15 a month. A special recording of the podcast where Jeff talks much slower for $1 million a month. And a monthly Skype hangout with Jeff and Ashley for $25 a month.
You can find Podigious on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook to keep up with the Digimons, hear about upcoming episodes and recordings, and get funny Digimon images and GIFs. You can find me on Twitter at AshMcD00, where I gain more followers, apparently, the less I tweet, which is great. And you can find Jeff on Twitter at...
JeffAndlyJeff, where I don't know, gain followers the more I post random images of manga.
Yeah, he has an opposite strategy. He goes very hard into the manga, and it works out for him.
It's not a purposeful strategy, it's just... I have manga thoughts in my brain.
It's just your natural personality, I know.
Share the podcast with your friends who represent love. And don't share the podcast with your friends who insist that women can only represent love. And join us next week, hopefully, as we cover 4 or 5, which we'll be covering the Royal Knights arc, which is infamously the everyone's favorite arc of Frontier. I hear that it is like... I mean, you've been riding this wave.
It was the best.
It's a roller coaster of Frontier. It's like up and down. But then Royal Knights arc is just like the peak of Digimon, the peak of anime, the peak of television as a medium.
I mean, Dinosmon's in it, so I'll buy it.
Bye.
Bye.
And remember, never stop Digivolving.